Sure. So a lot of them just come to us saying they have a press release ready to issue, and they've discovered us in their shopping mode for distribution. And so they'll use us. And what my job is at that point is to try to educate them, because I couldn't really educate them much on that initial release, but I can give them ideas for newsworthy subsequent releases that they could try and do and build out a PR campaign. So many people just say, so this happened to us, it's important, and we just want to get the news out and then go back to their business without thinking about PR and press releases. And I feel my job is to educate them and give them the tools and resources to do strategic types of releases. So I think that sometimes people share press releases that aren't very meaningful. And, you know, they'll do a press release that's like a new hire in HR, and it's not a major position. And, you know, they share material like that that's not going to probably result in media pickup. And more importantly, they also share that news with their customers and leads. And I think that it sort of is a head scratcher from that approach, because they're like, I don't get why this is being put in front of me. Why should I care? So yeah. I think that if you are sharing press releases with your customers and leads, which isn't a bad idea, not everybody gets earned media and not every press release is going to get the articles, but you can take your press release and share that with them. Make sure it's the meaningful press releases, the ones that are really showcasing you best.
Welcome to the Hands On Business Podcast. Where else are you going to come to get tips, tricks, and advice on growing your business? As you know, what people tend to love about this podcast is that it is a place where you can hear real business leaders discussing systems, methodologies, and strategies that they have used to help them catapult growth in their business. So I'm your podcast host, Hakeem Adebiyi, and I've grown several small businesses to multi-million pound enterprises and noticed that there wasn't really a place that focused on where I was, i.e. growing a small business. All of the content that seemed to be out there was about big business and often just a lot of theory and no practical implementable advice, which is exactly why I set up this podcast. So take a listen, enjoy, and start implementing the strategies that you hear on the podcast. Happy listening. Delighted that you could join us today to talk about PR. Now, we've chosen this particular topic because, having worked in the commercial world for over 25 years, I've lost count of the amount of times marketers or business owners, strategists, have proudly told me about their PR exposure. And then when I ask them how they measure the success of that PR campaign, I normally get, you know, obviously they talk about coverage, they talk about reach, they talk about mentions, clippings, etc., but rarely anything about return on investment. So I thought it'd be sensible to get someone on to the show who could talk to me about what everyone really wants to know, i.e. how do you use PR to close more sales? So as always, I try and go for the best and the most practical people that can give some real value on the show. Hence decided to get Mickey Kennedy on, who set up the company eReleases over 24 years ago to help with press releases and have been responsible for getting press coverage on places like CNN, Wall Street Journal, and Bloomberg, to name but a few. So welcome, Mickey.
Thanks for having me.
Delighted you could join. So, you know, let's get straight into it. You founded eReleases over 24 years ago. So can you just talk us through your journey from setting the company up? What made you want to set that company up, and then, you know, bring us up to 2023?
Sure. So I guess around 26, 27 years ago, I was a MFA creative writing graduate, and I was hired at a telecom research startup as employee number 3. And because I had a writing background, even though it was creative writing, they wanted me to figure out press releases and write press releases and send them to the media. And I did that, and I got really good at sort of determining what we were doing that was newsworthy. We published a lot of telecom traffic statistics from country to country, but there was like weird anomalies, like one Caribbean country accounted for more inbound and outbound traffic to the US than all the others combined. And it turned out it was a major 900 numbers center, where there was a lot of call centers and people, you know, working for that. And so I would put those stories together and send them to the media through fax. And we did really well. We would get picked up routinely by The Economist, Financial Times, global media, as well as like US media like Washington Post and Wall Street Journal. And what I noticed is I started to get a lot more phone calls from these journalists saying, hey, could you just email this to me rather than, you know, working with the fax? I can copy and paste the numbers and things like that. And that sort of got me thinking that email seems like a much better progression than fax, because fax is slow. You have to program numbers into a machine and it's loud and just, you know, it's annoying. So I had the idea of just creating an email database of journalists and emailing them press releases. And so I spent about a year contacting journalists at that time. I guess that was around 26 years ago, and asking them if I could put them on in my database and send them press releases in their industry. And the journalists thought that was novel. They were just like, you're not going to charge us. I'm like, no. And so that's what I did. I was just a matchmaker. I launched a website. I think I paid $3.95 a month for a website. I paid $30 to some service called MultiCards that would allow you to take money through credit cards without having an expensive merchant account. And this was pre-PayPal. And, you know, I went on to, I guess, what do you call these at the time? Email groups and bulletin boards and things like that, and just shared what I knew about PR, and people would come to me and use me. And I left the telecom research company and just focused on this as well as another project that I was working on. And when the dot-com crash happened, the other business sort of tanked, but e-releases continued to grow through that. And so I just doubled down and focused on that. And at some point, you know, Overture or GoTo.com started pay-per-click advertising for search engines. And so I started, you know, using that to drive people to the website. Then Google launched their ads program. And, you know, I sort of haven't looked back since then. The big thing being, you know, adding staff and figuring out how I work in the business and what my role will be and what I'm best suited for.
So in terms of, and that's a really useful outline to show your background in PR, but it's also interesting that you weren't what you'd describe as a PR professional when you started. It's almost, no. you kind of fell into it almost. Sure.
The big thing that changed over time is, I think over 10 years ago, PR Newswire reached out to me and said, hey, you should also send your releases through us. And I'm like, hey, my clients are spending a couple hundred dollars. I know that a national distribution with you is like $1,200 to $1,500 for like a 600-word press release. And so, you know, surprisingly, they didn't run away. They looked at my customer base. They realized that their salespeople were never going to reach out to people that might do two or three releases a year. And they're small businesses, and they would never pay, you know, a few hundred dollars to be members of PR Newswire. So they thought that let's try and find a way to work together. One of the things we noticed is they have an overnight editorial team that's not very active because, you know, they have to be there in case there's breaking news or a recall, or they have to get something to the Asian markets or something like that. But they're really just sitting idle. And I was like, why don't we set up all of our releases for next business day by default? And you can set them up overnight so that you're not incurring additional labor. So we did that, and it's been a really good partnership for more than 10 years, and everything seems to be, you know, working pretty well between the two of us. And it just allows my clients to spend under $500 and get a US national distribution over a major wire, as well as some of that email distribution that we've always been known for.
Excellent. And so in terms of your standard client, what does that standard client look like, and why would they go to you as opposed to maybe, you know, a PR agency?
Right. So most of our clients can't afford a PR agency. You know, most agencies start at, you know, anywhere from $2,500 to, you know, and up, you know, sometimes $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a month. They want a long-term contract, usually, you know, 6 months to a year minimum, and they don't guarantee anything for that usually. And so the clients that I represent are usually small businesses, mom and pops. You know, there's makers, people who produce goods. There's, you know, franchisees who just run a couple locations. There's also larger companies, but I also work with a lot of entrepreneurs, authors, a lot of it used to be self-published authors, but now we work with a lot of authors who are being published by major publishers, because most major publishers have stopped doing marketing for their authors, except for a very select few. So they've just sort of dumped marketing on their plate, and they're having to figure this out. So a lot of the people that we work with have, you know, either never done press releases or never done press releases that have been over a true wire like PR Newswire. And so there is a little bit of handholding and sort of getting them accustomed to what expectations are, as well as what the true potential is. Because, you know, people who are spending $50 to send a press release to just get syndicated on a few websites never see their material turned into an article, where a journalist, you know, writes an article and it appears in the New York Times or something like that. And that's the potential of, you know, issuing over a wire or reaching journalists directly. And so we do try to get people to steer towards that goal by doing strategic and newsworthy type of press releases that, you know, major media as well as trade publications would be interested in.
Okay, thank you very much. And then so moving on to the meat of it, which is obviously what people will be very interested in. So in terms of, obviously, you're doing this on a daily basis, your team is, can you explain what the relationship is between public relations and sales? And how do you get those two things to work together to drive the business growth? Because I'm assuming that everyone who comes to you, that's the real end goal that they're trying to get, is we want to grow our business.
Right. So you have to recognize that, you know, when it comes to PR, it is a little bit different than, you know, traditional marketing. You don't necessarily get to determine what the call to action is going to be in an article that's written about you. You don't necessarily get to control tracking URLs and things like that as well. So it is a little bit different in that respect. But, you know, the benefit of, you know, successful PR can be, you know, substantial. I've had a client who did a press release that we did for free during the pandemic. They had created a sort of an effort to help people, restaurants specifically, that were closed during the pandemic by, you know, allowing people to nominate their favorite local restaurant. If they accepted, you could give money that would go directly to that restaurant, and it'd be secured through what they called a dining bond or gift certificate type model. And they were sort of trying to borrow the bond of like the war bonds in the government wars in the past and things like that kind of effort. And it did substantially well. We did one release and we stopped counting at 150 media pickups. All the major publications picked it up, and a lot of food trades, and probably over 100 local newspapers picked it up. It did so well because it was positive news at a time where there was a lot of uncertainty with what's going on in the pandemic. Where are we closing for a week or two? Is this going to be longer? And people were concerned, you know, about their local businesses. And here was something where if they nominated their local favorite restaurant and they accepted, they could, you know, give a little bit of money that would help them during this time, because there wasn't really government dollars at that point to sort of solve how people are going to keep the lights on or give people their paychecks while they'd been sent home. And it generated in excess of $10 million in revenue. And like I said, over 150 media pickups that we stopped counting at, because there's just so many local newspapers that picked it up. It's possible it was over 250 places that picked it up, because so many of the pickups were local newspapers and things like that. So that shows you the true potential of, you know, just hitting send and going over a wire. If you have something that really speaks to a large group of people, a large group of people and journalists will respond in kind and turn these into articles. Every one of these pickups were original articles. They weren't the press release copy and pasted and put on a news site or something like that. And so that really is, you know, considerable value and revenue that could easily be counted, because that was the only promotion that was going forward with that. I think that when you have so many other efforts that you are doing, it gets harder to sort of measure. But there are things that you can do, like looking at traffic, you know, asking people where they came from, how they heard about you, you know, looking at the traffic that comes to your website. I do know that when you do get media pickup, I've had several customers come to me and say, is this right? We had like 300 people come from this news article and it looked like 150 of them bought. And that's like a 50% conversion rate. Is that possible? And I'm like, it is, because generally for someone to click from an article to you, they've read the article. It's like a third-party corroboration, almost like an implied endorsement about you that a journalist wrote about you. It's not viewed as an ad. And so a lot of them will click through and they have this warm feeling about this company they just read about and they want to do business with you. They're not going to open a new window and say, can I get this cheaper on Amazon or find someone else to provide this? They want to do business with this company. And so that's a real benefit of having that sort of social proof that happens when someone writes about you. And, you know, it is amazing credibility when you get like in major news, but it's also credibility when you get in a like a local newspaper or even in a trade or industry publication or things like that. And, you know, that really shows, you know, a huge possibility that you may not get millions of dollars like the Dining Bond Initiative did, but you can certainly add some revenue and some leads to your funnel by, you know, getting people engaged and hearing about you in articles and reading about you and things like that. And so other things that you can do is then take that article and share it with your own leads. There's always people that are going to be on the fence and they're not going to swing your way. So they're not going to do business with you. They're like, I don't know who I should go with. And they choose someone else. But if they see that article, maybe they'll get that sort of same feeling of credibility and implied endorsement that happens from reading the article and say, yeah, this is the company I want to do business with. It's also good to get that out there and share it with your customers, put it on your social media, get it out there, because more customers who see that will feel more comfortable saying, I'm with the right company, and, you know, not shop like they may do every 6 months to a year to say, do we have the best vendors? Should we consider someone else?
Just a quick one. On the Dining Bond Initiative, so obviously you made, you can very clearly see what you delivered there. So how much did they pay to you in the initial instance to start that press release campaign?
They paid me nothing. I did it for free because it was a sort of nonprofit sort of scenario where they were just trying to help. And it seemed like a really cool effort. I just asked if I could, follow the results and share it in a case study, which I have on my website. And it would have cost, as a new customer, like $350 to have moved that release. So there was a substantial return on nothing there. But, you know, even if it had been $350, I challenged the best marketers out there to say, you know, put $350 into a marketing effort, and on the other side, pull out, you know, excess of $10 million in revenue. It's very hard to be done, but it is possible. Those types of leverage points can be possible with PR. It doesn't always happen. The more realistic thing is I have clients who will do press releases. They'll do a campaign of 6 to 8 press releases, which is usually a good small campaign. And maybe 2 or 3 of them result in earned media, which we call articles. They're, you know, original articles that are written about you. So not everyone is going to result in articles, but the ones that do, they might see, you know, a $30,000 bump in sales that month, or, you know, they might see, you know, $10,000 to $15,000, or, you know, there's lots of different ways in which they can sort of measure it, sort of using benchmarks that they've already established with what they are normally doing during that month, or with the, you know, the type of places that they're currently marketing to. And that's probably more realistic of what happens with PR. It does make it a little bit difficult to measure, like I said, you know, because you don't get the tracking URLs and you don't always know where people come from. So it is a little bit of a guessing game. But that being said, you know, eReleases has been very fortunate that every time we've had a recession, you know, the dot-com crash, the 2008, 2009, even during the pandemic, when a lot of people saw a drop off in their businesses, we grew during those times. And I think what happens is there are a lot of people that when there's recessions or they have to start tightening their belt and spending less, like maybe, you know, pausing ad campaigns, they start looking at what could we do that doesn't cost very much, that takes a little bit more time and effort and we've just put off. And I think that PR is one of those things that doesn't get a priority when things are moving, say, you know, moving well and things are growing and your marketing is working. But all of a sudden, when you can't allocate $6,000 a month to Google Ads, you start saying, what could I do with, you know, a couple thousand dollars over the next 6 months? PR is one of those things that you can do. And it just takes a little bit of effort to be creative with what you want to send out and really sort of honing and defining a message that will resonate with the media. Journalists are storytellers. So everything you do and put together in a press release, you should sort of think about creating a story. I get so many product launch press releases that are just, here's our product and here's a list of features. And it's very difficult for a journalist to build a story around that. But if you were to add a use case study, someone who beta tested it, what their results were, and maybe a quote by them, all of a sudden a journalist can build a good story arc there saying, here's a new product, here's a company that used it, here's the results that they saw, and here's a statement from them. And also here are some features of this product. And so that makes it much more rounded and, you know, gives them the story that they want to share with their audience. And so as long as you sort of keep that story arc in mind, there's, you know, really cool stuff that you can do. A lot of startups, we work with a lot of startups, about a third of the people that appear on Shark Tank do a press release with us before their episode airs because the producers recommend that. And so they do really well with PR. Doesn't hurt that they're on a national TV show, but I think the thing that they do really well is they have an elevator pitch. They know what they do that's different than everybody else that they can just succinctly say in a sentence or two. And they also are really good about their stories. They know what the arc is that resonates with people because they're pitching all the time. So they'll have a, you know, it might be an interesting startup story of, hey, me and my best friend found this problem and we solved it, or I was working on this. And so having your own unique story and being authentic, whether it's inspirational or overcoming an obstacle, whether a business obstacle or a personal obstacle, like you're a cancer survivor or something like that, you know, being vulnerable and sharing your story goes a long ways towards filling out a press release and giving them the material to build a story.
Okay, thanks. And just on that note, and then we're going to get a bit more into the story arc and storytelling. So when people come to you, when a standard client comes to you, do they come with that story? Do you build that story? And what are they saying? Well, I just want to get a press release because I want to get, you know, as much noise. Or what's the sort of things they're coming to you with, the problems they're coming to you with?
Sure. So a lot of them just come to us saying they, you know, they have a press release ready to issue. And they've discovered us in their shopping mode for distribution. And so they'll use us. And what my job is at that point is to try to educate them, because I couldn't really educate them much on that initial release, but I can give them ideas for newsworthy subsequent releases that they could try and do and build out a PR campaign. So many people just say, so this happened to us, it's important, and we just want to get the news out and then go back to their business without thinking about PR and press releases. And I feel my job is to educate them and give them the tools and resources to do strategic types of releases. I used to do coaching where I would coach certain people through these things, help them build their stories and things like that. But I just don't have the time or resources right now to do that beyond the people that I currently serve. So what I've done instead is put together a free masterclass where I teach the strategic types of press releases that work and, you know, get results. I have one that has never failed that every client who has followed it has got media attention, real earned media, original articles written about them. And that's just doing a survey or study in their industry. You know, it's a matter of, you can go to SurveyMonkey, create an account, build out four pages with four questions on each page. And if someone stops halfway, you still got half of their responses. And on the final page, if you have room, you can add, you know, a couple left field questions or weird questions. If they don't complete that, you've still got 75% of the results that they did complete. And sometimes those strange questions are the ones that become really intriguing press releases. You take the results and you sort of figure out what's the big surprises in the survey. You do want to make sure you ask meaningful questions. And I always say, ask questions that have an expiration date. For example, what's going on right now that's novel or different in your industry? Is it, you know, hiring challenges, people not wanting to come back into the workplace and wanting to work from home? Is it you're spending less money on marketing over the next two quarters? Is that what other people are doing? Are they being very cautious? Could this be signaling a recession or something like that? So ask really timely questions that are going on right now, but also the types of questions you would ask if you were at a trade show or conference and you were asking a colleague, have you noticed that most people are now late paying? Used to be, you know, they pay within 30 days and now it's like getting closer to 60, 90 days. That could signal that there's a tightening money crunch that's happening in your industry. So, you know, asking those types of questions and putting them in there, you can discount the ones that don't really pull any surprises and just focus on like maybe 2 to 4 questions that were intriguing and interesting. And you're going to put what those results were and you're going to put a quote by you as to why you feel the results skewed that way, because now you're the expert. By just saying, you know, I did the survey and here I am as an expert, and it really solidifies you and your business as an expert in your industry. And, you know, I had a local auto repair shop in Pennsylvania who came to me with an SEO assignment saying, we need to get links to a new domain name. We lost ours because it was tied to the Yellow Pages and we're not paying them anymore. And so they were looking for a link specifically from auto trade publications, not their customers. So I told them that the only way I knew that that could work is to do a survey. And on the last page of the survey, we asked the crazy question, what's the strangest thing a customer left in their car while being repaired? And the survey was sent out to other auto repair shops nationwide. They just asked a small independent trade association that they belong to if they'd send it to their members. In exchange, they would mention them in a press release they'd be issuing over the wire. And when you approach small and independent trade associations with that scenario, it's a win-win for them. They don't get the love and attention that the large trade associations do. So they see this as a possibility for them to get some media attention as well. So they'll usually gladly send it either through email or through social media. Sometimes you can get them to do both. And it's just as simple as just sharing this little link that you've created on SurveyMonkey, and you get people to complete it. You don't have to have thousands of respondents for it to be newsworthy. You know, I've seen surveys that have as few as 100, 140 people that the media still responds to and writes articles about them. So you don't have to overthink it, and it doesn't have to be really complex. It just has to be sort of creative at the point that you came up with interesting questions. And in their case, when they did the what's the strangest things people left, we decided that was going to be the winner. We built a whole resource page with all the questions and answers. We put all of the responses. I think there was like over 80 strange things that people had left. And in the press release, we just focused on like the top, it was either top 10 or top 20. And we linked to the page where they could get all of them. And over a dozen auto industry publications and websites picked it up. And most of them linked to that resource page because there was a lot of information there. And you could get the whole list of zany things that people left in their car. And so it did extremely well. Within 3 months, they were ranking number one in their area for auto repair searches and things like that, which was their goal. But it just sort of shows the possibility that can happen by, you know, making the news. They really had this feeling that they weren't important, I guess an imposter syndrome that they had, where like, who are we to do a survey in our industry? Who are we to do this? And I'm just like, you're the one who raised your hand and did it. That in and of itself makes you the owner of this data and the expert that's getting this information out there. And so they did extremely well. And I think that anybody can replicate something like that and do a survey for their industry. I have one client, clutch.co, that has lots of little verticals in lots of little industries that they represent. And there are segments of their website that respond and are built just for those little segments. And so they do surveys for each of these segments, and they've been doing them for years. It's all they do. They do like, I think, over 30 survey press releases a year, each one for each of those little markets, those little niches. And on average, they get between 8 and 14 articles for every press release they do. I think the least I've seen lately is like one that got 4 articles. And, you know, maybe that shows that the questions they focused on in that press release maybe weren't the right questions. But it is something that you can just replicate again and again, because if you ask the important questions today, the answers are going to be different in 6 months. And the types of questions you should ask in 6 months are going to be a little bit different as well. If you're going to have some additional ones that are more timely and specific to what's going on at that moment. And so it is something that you can just reach in and do again and again. And when the media sees data and numbers and things where they can make, you know, positions or statements on what's going on right now. It's really actionable, and they love to write those types of articles.
That's a really nice, concise, and easy way to start getting some press coverage in its surveys, because people like data, and it gives you that level of authority because you've actually done some research rather than it's just coming from an individual. And one of the things, and you mentioned it earlier when you were talking about, you know, people publishing books and self-publishing, that's one of the, a lot of people come to me and talk about, oh, I've got a new book, how should I publicize it? Could you still use that survey methodology, or would you recommend a different type of PR for if you've got a book that you've launched and you want to, or even you've launched it a long time ago, you've not really done much with it, and you now want to almost like give it a new lease of life?
That's right. So there's lots of different ways I've seen people approach that that's worked. I haven't had people do a survey for a new book that's being launched. I have had people who take new numbers that come out in their industry and then talk about the problem and then talk about their book and how it solved and addressed those problems. And so even a book that was published 2 years ago is now still speaking to that problem that's obviously very prevalent right now, because the data is showing that this is becoming more of a problem or more of an issue for people. So sometimes just taking data that's already out there and packaging it together or putting it in something can really be something that the media can immediately work with. Like I said, they do love data and numbers. Other things that I've seen that's worked for businesses or specifically books is sometimes putting a list together of like the top 10 books in your industry and putting your book as one of them. And it works better now than it has in the past, because journalists are expected to do more with less time and less money and less resources than they used to. Newspapers and trade publications and other places are not making as much money as they used to, for the most part. They're having to make do with less. And so if you have content that's almost ready to, you know, like copy and paste a top 10 list, it's really easy for them to build that into as filler or fill a need to, you know, they have the space to generate an article. And so sometimes I've seen it work really well with new podcasts, where someone has a historical new podcast that they launched and they put together a top 10 list of whatever that niche is, like a top 10 historical Civil War podcast. And they really do pick amazing podcasts, but then they sandwich it in there with theirs. And a journalist is going to just see, oh yeah, these two or three are great podcasts. This person obviously knows what they're doing, and, you know, copy and paste the whole thing. And it's a great way to sort of get yourself out there and get some exposure. So, you know, that works really well. But, you know, there are lots of different ways to sort of tackle it. I think that books, you know, nonfiction books do stand a chance of getting media attention. It's a matter of sort of taking, you know, what does your book solve? What does your book do that's different from all the other books that have been produced in your industry? And again, just like the startups, you want to be able to articulate that in a sentence or two, an elevator pitch of what your book is doing and what it solves in your marketplace. And I think that, you know, by doing that and building a story type press release that has all the materials for determining, you know, a very readable article, I think you stand a great chance, you know, keeping in mind, you know, inserting data, inserting, you know, quotes about what's going on in your industry. Quotes are a really powerful thing. So many of the press releases that I get have safe quotes that just look like they were an afterthought. And what you don't understand is journalists can build an article around a great quote. And by a great quote, it's something that if a journalist paraphrased what you said, there would be a loss of some sort. Could be a loss of how precise that you spoke, or it could be the certainty with which you spoke, the authority with which you spoke. It could be the creative spark that you said something beautifully. So a quote is something you want to spend a lot of time on and sort of energy. And the journalists will generally reward you for that, because if they're looking at two press releases that are very similar in newsworthiness, but one has an amazing quote, the journalist is going to naturally gravitate to that, because they know that they can build out the rest of the press release into an article. And, you know, that quote will just be a highlight, a spotlight of what this issue is.
Oh, excellent. So that's really useful advice for anyone who's written a book or wants to promote a book and even a podcast. I might even try that myself, actually. I quite like the idea about the podcast. And I think actually on Spotify, I was, if I'm not mistaken, I haven't checked it recently, but I was in the top 25% of business podcasts, actually. So that was actually quite encouraging. But to be fair, I haven't done anything with that, which is very remiss of me, apart from I posted it on LinkedIn. So yeah, that's some really good advice that I will be taking most definitely. And then we talked earlier before about, you know, the ROI and how does it generate sales. And obviously the example we gave where we got the 10 million in the Dining Bond initiative is a very clear one. But if you haven't got something as clear as that, what are the sort of metrics that you would suggest that people should be tracking to get an idea of what sort of sales impact they're getting from their PR efforts?
Right. So I had a carpet company in New Jersey come to me and said, we have a budget to do a press releases for a year, one a month. And I told them, I don't think it's going to work for you. I think that just being a local carpet company in New Jersey, I can't think of anything that's going to be newsworthy and sort of help you reach your customers. And they came back and said, well, we don't want to necessarily reach our customers. We'd like to reach floor and covering trade publications. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting. But, you know, we could do a survey, or, you know, we were brainstorming. And they were really resistant to the survey. They just felt like, for whatever reason, I think that imposter syndrome was riding high. And so we did several releases with them that didn't do anything. And I didn't think that they would. But when we were brainstorming, they told me that their biggest enemy was the big box home improvement stores. And I'm like, that's interesting. And so, you know, the media loves a story. Here's a David and Goliath sort of situation where you're just a local business competing against this multi-billion dollar home improvement giant. And so we did a press release where we talked about how they have to market against what they considered an inferior product and service, where the big box home improvement stores are installing carpet and they're not using carpet installers. The only thing they do is they go down the list of people who have a home improvement license in their state and just say, hey, we're calling because we have some carpet to be installed. Is this something you're interested in for tomorrow? And they don't ask, have you installed carpet before? Do you know how to stretch a carpet? Do you know how to, you know, do a seam? And people just take up the work and do it. And as a result, people get carpets that don't look right, don't wear right, and they're just not what people are expecting. And so we did a press release about that, sent it to the media, and over 10 floor trade publications picked it up because they really found this whole David versus Goliath thing really interesting. And they liked the idea of what they were doing to sort of position themselves against them. And one of the publications actually ended up offering them a marketing column because we did additional releases talking about marketing and how they market and compete against the big box home improvement stores. And so my client didn't do that because we were writing the releases and they knew we'd have to write the column and that would just be more money. So we just focused on doing more releases. But at the end of a year, they had probably been picked up in over 30 places. They were picked up in their local newspaper and New Jersey Magazine, which was really big. But I did tell them I had concerns that they weren't getting the full value because only a couple publications actually reach their customers. Most of these were floor trade publications, which were others, you know, businesses like them. And they shared with me what they were doing. They were putting all of these clips, they were printing out when they got published online and other places, and they were printing them and putting them in a book. And when they go to give someone a quote at their house, they go, hey, you know, we may not come in the cheapest, but all of our installers are salaried. They know what to do. We have rarely ever had to come back into someone's house and stretch the carpet within 5 years. We use superior padding. And, you know, here's what people in our industry have to say about us. And they shared the book saying, here we are in Floor Trade Weekly. Here we are in this publication. And here we are in New Jersey Magazine, the local newspaper. And they said they started converting 14 to 17% more of their leads just by having what they called a brag book that they shared with them. And it's that credibility that happens, you know, that social proof. And for them, you know, that was substantial as far as, you know, that kind of jump in conversions that they were getting, just putting that in the sales process. And so it turned out they knew more about what their intent to use these clips were than I was originally thinking, because I was like, felt bad taking their money and they're only getting articles in places where their customers aren't reading. But, you know, it depended what their goal was. And their goal was to build credibility and stand out in their local market. And that really served them extremely well. And I think that that's something that anybody can do. I mean, you've probably been on people's websites where they'll say, as seen on, with logos of different places and things like that. But you can also do screenshots of the articles. I always recommend my clients do that because links can go away. There are website updates where old archives just get lost. And so you want to make sure you've created screenshots, you've preserved it. And while that link is still active, share it with as many people as possible on your social media, you know, put it in your newsletter, put it on your blog, really get that out there and take advantage of it. Because the same opportunity that the company that did the carpet brag book can, you know, you can create your own brag book online and share that with your people.
I think that's what most people want to do with PR, but probably just don't know how to then fit that into their sales cycle. Because I think that to me seems like a real practical and simple thing to do, that you've got quite a lot of press coverage. And then you're using that, as you just said, to build credibility so that when you, and social proof, so that when you are speaking to your customer group, whether that's online or in person, you're basically saying, well, you can trust us because look at all this PR that everybody said about us. So they wouldn't be saying that if it wasn't actually the reality.
Right. Yeah. I remember my daughter came to me years ago when she was young and had a web page that she wanted to buy something on and wanted my credit card. And I looked at the website and I was like, I don't know if I trust this website. It's not Amazon. It's not something. But as I was exploring the website, I saw they had a news section and I saw that they had press releases going back 7 years. And I said, this is not someone who's a fly by night. You know, they care about their reputation. They issue news on an ongoing basis. There was some media pickup as well that was on their website. So I felt very comfortable at that point sharing my credit card. And it made me realize that, you know, that's the same thing that a lot of people go through. And they're looking for things that signal that this is a reputable company, someone I can trust with my credit card, someone I can trust, you know, with this need that I have to be fulfilled. And I think that PR can definitely be one of those major signals that can get you that sort of comfort level with potential customers.
That example about the carpet fitters is like a small local company, but you've also got people onto the Wall Street Journal, CNN and Bloomberg. I mentioned that right at the beginning. So is there a difference when you're working with a small local company and you try to get into local news and when you try to get into these big, you know, conglomerates where they're getting news from everywhere? How do you navigate that?
Right. So at eReleases, all of our releases go out nationally, but we do offer for an additional fee local saturation. And what people need to understand is that there are journalists that tag themselves in the wire as local. So they don't want to see national news. But if there is national news and it's from a local company, they do want to see it. So that local saturation can really help you for local media attention. I do also advise a lot of people who come to me that are looking solely for local news to maybe consider doing it themselves. You know, you can pay a service like us to do it, but local media is some of the easiest media for people to get themselves. And if you think about it, there's probably less than 10 people who are in your market who would write about you. Find out who those 10 people are, get their email address, and then just introduce yourself to them. It's so much easier to have that human element of yourself being a local business and sort of just introducing yourself and sharing what you feel is a really newsworthy idea. You don't even have to write a press release. A sentence or two of something that you feel it's important or newsworthy, like maybe you've seen a major trend in your industry and you could say, hey, there's been a big trend in my industry towards this, and I would love to talk to you about how we fulfill that as a local business in this community. And add an amazing quote right there. Put that one or two sentence quote that's just phenomenal that'll knock their socks off. And they're like, wow, this is a great quote. And that's a cool concept. I can build a story around that. And, you know, journalists are part of the community. They want to be accessible. So if you call and ask for their email address, I've never had that not be a problem of getting it. Sometimes they'll just forward you directly to the journalist to ask for it, but sometimes they'll just provide it to you. And it's also can be found online in some instances. If there are radio or TV programs that sometimes spotlight businesses, like some that are in your industry, just call and ask for the producer or booker of that segment and get their email address as well. And just introduce yourself and be a resource for these people. When they have something in your industry, say, I would love to provide you a quote or, you know, some analysis or things like that. And what you'll notice is you will be pitching them, but after a while, they'll be coming to you and say, hey, we have this story. I felt like your company would be a good fit. Could I get a quote and put you in the story? And so that happens quite frequently with a lot of my customers. And how frequently should you target local media? I think a good rule of thumb is to try to do it quarterly. You know, if you don't have something in a quarter that you can pitch, then maybe you hold off that quarter, but, you know, try to be creative and come up with something that you feel would be interesting. A good way to do that is to, if you're ever at a trade show and you're a local business, you know, get the cards of other local businesses in other cities and set Google alerts for them. And when you see them in the news, you could say, hey, is this an article that I could be plugged in my local market? And the way to handle that is don't go to the journalist and say, here's an article in another city. Can we copy this for me? No, what you do is you take the elements of that story, say, hey, I've seen people talking about, you know, environmental issues in the dry cleaning business. And I would love to talk to you about this new thing that we're doing and how we're addressing it. And, you know, again, try to add an amazing quote there and then just pitch them. And so there's lots of little ways to sort of, you know, make yourself not a nuisance, but on the front of mind of journalists. And you want to balance that. And you're always going to deal with someone who's a little bit cranky or, you know, not having a good day when you reach out to them. But, you know, don't let it kill it. Just, you know, keep at it. And what you'll find is eventually you will get that local media that you need. And as you have newsworthy ideas, you know, you want to get those in front of the local market. And like I said, it's probably well under 10 journalists that you're looking to reach out to, you know, maybe a local newspaper, maybe there's a weekly paper, maybe there's a local business magazine or a business newspaper or something like that. And generally, you know, maybe a couple of segments that you've identified that radio or TV might play into from time to time.
Excellent. So the message is, if it's local, do it yourself. And you've just given us some nice little strategies there, which I've taken notes on. I know people will be thinking about that because it's just some really good tips. So that's the local bit, but I mean, is there a blueprint for getting onto the CNNs and those sort of things, or does it just depend on how newsworthy it actually is?
It kind of depends on how newsworthy it is. I do have clients that I've worked with before that just do phenomenally well. They get on morning TV programs, they get on late night TV, and it's usually because they're doing something that's a little lighthearted or silly. Like we have one client, Celebra Ducks, that does celebrity little rubber ducks with their faces and stuff. Like they also do like William Shakespeare and all these other different characters from history and stuff like that. And they were invited to the Tonight Show years ago, and they've been on several morning shows and they just do phenomenally well. And I think it's because it's a very lighthearted and cool concept. It's not something that a lot of people are doing. It's a very tailored product. There's a lot of molds that have to be made for these. It's not something that anyone can easily replicate. And I think that, you know, if you're outside of that, it's harder. So the things you need to do is just be more strategic, like doing the survey type press releases or identifying, you know, something that's, you know, a blind spot in your industry. The carpet company identified that trade publications aren't really talking about marketing. And what they found is that their readers are very interested in how people are marketing in their industry. So we ended up doing lots of, you know, marketing efforts that my client was doing against the big box home improvement store and just talking about them in subsequent press releases. And we continued to get picked up. We went from like the initial press release did like, I think 10 or so media pickups. And we did like 5 or 6 more releases talking about marketing. And in total, we got, you know, 30, including the local newspaper and New Jersey Magazine. And I think that, you know, taking these strategic types of press releases and working them and, you know, determining what's there. Because once you identify something that's really hot or a blind spot, you can continue to speak to that blind spot until it's covered within your industry. And so that's what we did. We did, you know, several releases on just marketing, and it was definitely a blind spot in that industry as far as trade publications go. And there's probably blind spots in every industry, things that don't get talked about. Sometimes it's for a reason. I had a cybersecurity company come to me and talked about all the security holes that are in e-commerce and how some of the things, like even Amazon working, have these holes that are in them. And they did that press release, and all they got were people saying, everyone knows this, just keep your mouth shut. No one wants to talk about it, because there's no easy solution to what you're talking about. And so sometimes they're ignored for a reason, but sometimes they are opportunities that your industry wants to open up and talk about. And if you break that, you can sort of continue to break that and share on those subjects. But there's lots of different ways in which to strategically look at press releases. And for most people, unfortunately, they come to e-releases with a press release that's already created, and they're just looking to send it out. And that's why I have that free masterclass on, here are what you should be thinking about for your next releases and the types of releases you should consider.
So your advice on that really would be that rather than writing a press release and then coming to you, that actually watch the masterclass first, then write the release, then come to you.
Right. And any of your listeners can go and check out the free masterclass. It's less than an hour. It's at ereleases.com/plan, P-L-A-N. And it's completely free. I didn't want to sell it as a class or anything like that, because I really want my customers to do, you know, newsworthy releases, because the more that do those, the more media pickup they will get, and the more press releases they'll subsequently be doing. But it's a great place to start, because it gives you an audit of what's going on that you could be doing strategically.
Yeah, no, and I think that's it'll be really useful for people. And I'll drop that link in the podcast description so that people can go there, because I think most people either go, as we said at the outset, go to a PR agent to try and get them to write the PR release, which is going to cost them a lot of money, or they try it themselves and it's not very good. and either way, that's probably not the ideal. The ideal starting point is to get some advice, especially, you know, this podcast is generally for small business owners and entrepreneurs who maybe haven't got a huge budget. So doing a masterclass whereby they can actually craft what they want to write and then go into something like e-releases to get that then syndicated, it makes much more sense. It's a nice process, I think. And just on that note, so if you are, because we talked about, you know, earlier about you got your PR releases, you want to then almost flip that into your sales cycle to help you close more sales. How do you ensure that, you know, that your PR campaign fits in with that sales cycle and the pitch?
I think that you have to sort of look at the context of the media pickup. Well, how does it position you? You know, what was the focus? If someone reads that article, do they have a positive feeling? You know, does it really showcase you? And if it doesn't, then maybe it's just you share logos of where your media pickup is and not necessarily focus on the actual words of the article. But I think for a lot of people, most articles that get written about them are usually pretty positive, and they usually are focusing on what the press release was on. And that's usually what they're wanting to market and promote. It may not always be like a direct link to the actual product. It might be a link to a website, the homepage, rather than you would prefer them to go directly to the product page, because you know it's less friction and better to convert. But you just sort of have to accept the limitations of the media and what their policies are. There are, for example, you know, the New York Times generally doesn't link to anybody. People just have to open a new browser and do a search for that company name and find you. You know, so that does happen. I do always recommend that if you do have a paid advertising campaign on Google, make sure you're paying for your own keyword, your name, your company name, so that when people do a search, if they see an ad, it will be you. And then the organic natural results will also be you most likely as well. And, you know, those are all types of efforts that you could do. One thing I will say is that most of the customers who come to me who are reluctant about PR feel that they're just too small to matter, that they're just, you know, in some cases it's a home business, or it's just a little local company that's selling online to everyone, but they just sort of feel this sort of, you know, like they're not important enough for the news. And what you have to recognize is that journalists don't like writing articles about well-funded big giant companies. They have to cover Google. They have to cover Amazon. They have to cover them, but they don't like that. They love to profile small little startups, small little businesses. Journalists like to be seen as curators. And we already know about Amazon and these other companies. So they like to bring little undiscovered businesses and share that with their audience. And so you do stand a higher chance of media pickup being small and being a mom and pop business. And that's surprising to a lot of people. But it is sort of like a superpower that you have. Also, the other thing, being very lean, you can sort of, you know, take other ways of approaching things and maybe even do a pivot and address things. And, you know, I think that's why small businesses did so well during the pandemic, when they did their pivots and transitioned, where a lot of the larger companies were sort of caught off guard and had to, you know, really substantially recast their earnings and things like that because of the changes they were forced to make very slowly.
Thank you very much. So my penultimate question. So just what are some of the common mistakes that you'd say that you've seen when people are trying to, you know, use PR to close more sales, and how could you avoid those?
So I think that sometimes people share press releases that aren't very meaningful. And, you know, they'll do a press release that's like a new hire in HR, and it's not a major position. And, you know, they share material like that that's not going to probably result in media pickup. And more importantly, they also share that news with their customers and leads. And I think that it sort of is a head scratcher from that approach, because they're like, I don't get why this is being put in front of me. Why should I care? So yeah. I think that if you are sharing press releases with your customers and leads, which isn't a bad idea, not everybody gets earned media, and not every press release is going to get the articles, but you can take your press release and share that with them. Make sure it's the meaningful press releases, the ones that are really showcasing you best. And, you know, if you do have like a new president of the company and it's someone who's like known in the industry, then that's a different thing. But if it's just a regular hire, you know, save that to send to your local newspaper and maybe a key trade publication that you could just do yourself. Don't spend money to send that on the wire, and don't necessarily share that with your customers and leads. Make it meaningful stuff that you're sharing with them, stuff that matters. And for some people, it's a little difficult measuring or determining what it is that matters. But I can tell you the types of releases I probably wouldn't bother sharing would be, you know, personnel changes, some of the earnings stuff that people do and that publish numbers and stuff. Most of those are publicly traded companies, but there are some private companies that share their revenue and their growth and things like that. You know, if it's really positive and the messaging in the press release is about some of the new things that you're able to offer as a result of, you know, increasing your revenue and taking more market share and things like that, then it stands a chance. But sometimes it can come across just as, you know, bragging a little bit. So you want to be mindful of that.
Okay, thank you very much. And then the last question is, if people have listened to it and have sort of like been watching something else while listening to it, and there's one thing that you could capture them with and say, right, if you're going to do PR and you want to link it and you want to drive your sales, what would that one thing be you'd want to leave them with?
I think to sort of view PR as a campaign of several press releases. We do get a lot of people who do one press release and never do another one. They sort of view it as, this is a once in a lifetime thing that we've encountered. We want to send it to the media and then just forget about PR because, hey, we're not doing anything that's earth shattering. You don't have to be doing anything that's earth shattering to get media pickup. And you can sort of build a PR campaign of several releases, testing different types of press releases, different types of hooks, different types of angles, being strategic as much as you can, and measuring it as a campaign rather than a single press release. And I definitely want to be graded in my PR efforts and the value that I provide over a campaign of press releases than just a single press release.
Okay, that's a perfect place on which to close. So, Mickey Kennedy, thank you very much. As we've been talking, as I said, we're going to drop in the links. So we'll drop in a link to obviously e-releases. We'll drop in a link to the specifically to the masterclass as well, because I think as we were discussing, that would be the best place to start if you want to start doing press releases and join, watch the masterclass. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Absolutely nothing better than having a podcast guest on who actually teaches you to do loads and stuff. So you're taking loads of notes that you're actually going to implement into your business. So, you know, the key takeaways for me are really about the survey and the study that he was talking about, that Mickey was talking about, in terms of getting surveys, really useful for press releases, you know, creating a good story arc. And obviously the masterclass that you've got in the link to will help you with that. You know, how to promote books, how to promote podcasts was another one. And then the big one, you know, because I know a lot of people who listen to this podcast will be local businesses, etc. If it's a local business, do it yourself, do it quarterly. And he gave you those key steps to really focus on to make sure that you get some decent PR coverage if you're looking to do it locally. And then, as he said, the one key takeaway, view PR as a campaign of several press releases. Don't just do one press release and think it's going to deliver. And don't forget to check out the show notes at www.thesalesaccelerationformula.com. And as always, subscribe, like, and share with your friends, colleagues, and anyone else who you think may be interested. But most of all, keep the feedback coming so that we can continue to improve and give you more of what you like. Hope you enjoyed this as much as I did, and as I always do, keep listening and keep growing.